It's time for JT the Brick.
The Raider offseason is about content that is productive.
Shotgun to O'Connell. Backpedaling, lobbing to the end zone, trying to get at him. Makes the grab! Touchdown, Raiders!
I thought Aiden O'Connell played pretty well last year. He's a quarterback who's serviceable.
Now pressure. Gets out of there. Cosby's got him from behind! Back at the 45-yard line!
There's no better player who plays with heart and passion and speed than Mad Max Crosby. Wait till you see him this upcoming season.
JT the Brick.
Dot to throw. Spillane on the blitz, and he wraps him up and holds him up for a sack.
I love the addition of Jack Jones. All the plays he made last year will be a great addition for this team moving forward.
Intercepted down the sideline. Intercepted Jack Jones, and he walks in. Touchdown.
And now,
Raiders!
All right, now we're good. Let's get to it.
Here's JT the Brick.
I love that montage. That's what you call it, right, Bobby? A montage in radio? An open montage. The montage open. Just a lot of, like, a hodgepodge of sounds and observations. This is Vinny Bonsignore. I'm sitting in for JT the Brick. I'll be here for another hour. We got Adam Hill, my great colleague from Vegas Nation and the Las Vegas Review Journal. He'll be coming up in about a minute. Our thanks to our callers. Our thanks to Sean Reed from The Athletic earlier at 12:30, talking about his observations from the first day of OTAs. You know, obviously you're not going to make full conclusions after day one, especially of an OTA practice. Part of the team wasn't there. Devontae Adams was getting work done behind the scenes, so he wasn't on the field. But it was cool to get our first glimpse of Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. By the way, Carter Bradley, the undrafted free agent quarterback from South Alabama, the son of Gus Bradley, former Raiders defensive coordinator. I think he's got a little something. I'm not saying that he's going to crack the code this year or anything like that. And it may not even happen with the Raiders, for that matter, over the course of his career. But I feel like he's got some NFL traits, let's put it that way. So interesting to see some of the younger players, the undrafted free agents, the rookies, DeCamrion Richardsons, MJ Devonshire, the young cornerback from Pittsburgh, Tyler Laube, the running back from New Hampshire, who got a lot of play yesterday. They were handing it off to him. They were throwing it to him. So could he be a factor in his rookie year? Obviously, Brock Bowers, and they were lining him up every which way and handed it off to him a couple of times. They handed it off on a little fly sweep to Michael Mayer. He was talking about the speed increase, and he did look a little bit faster. And part of that is also playing with a little bit more confidence and understanding of what you're supposed to be doing. When you don't know what it is that you're supposed to be doing or don't have a tight command on it, you're just going to play slower. And that, you often see that with rookies. I feel like Michael Mayer has shaken himself out of that and looked much more decisive in practice yesterday than he was at this point last year. We're going to go out to the Raider Nation Radio guest line and welcome in my good friend and colleague over at Vegas Nation, Adam Hill. And for those of you who don't know, Adam Hill is an aficionado, I guess that's the right word to use, of special teams. This guy knows special teams like the back of his hand. It's his thing. We like to refer to him as the Raiders special teams SID. That stands for Sports Information Director in the college ranks. So he's a special teams sports information director for the Raiders. Now, Adam, thank you, first of all, for joining me. I really appreciate it. Yesterday, Tom McMahon got up in front of us and had a little clinic. It was almost like a clinic listening to Tom McMahon talk. And if I don't have eyes behind my back, Adam sits right directly behind me in the media room, so I couldn't keep an eye on you. But I imagine that you're smiling. I want to know, level of appreciation, which would have been higher? What Tom was talking about yesterday in terms of the special teams, the rolls at Texas Roadhouse, or the salad bar at Sizzler Steakhouse? For you, Adam Hill.
Wow. Mm. I mean, any salad bar ranks very highly for me, mostly, as long as it's fresh.
Yes.
If you give me a fresh salad bar, I'm pretty happy, but not much makes me happier in life than a really deep dive into special teams.
Right.
It's fantastic. And just a little backstory for those that, I think I might have told this before over on this station, but my first year covering the team, obviously there wasn't a quarterback competition like we have this year to
Correct.
Cover. there was a punter competition.
Oh.
So they had drafted Johnny Townsend the year before, and you know, he didn't have a great season. They brought in AJ Cole as an undrafted rookie free agent to compete with Townsend in camp. It was a really intensive battle. It was a really intense battle, up in Napa. And every day, I would be over there, doing the hang time stopwatch on both of their punts every time they punted. They both punted every day and have the stopwatch out, and eventually everyone did it. We had 15 reporters over there with stopwatches trying to compare notes on the hang time on the punting battle. And very early, I kind of said, look, this isn't a battle anymore. This is, AJ Cole's job. He's won it. And I kind of hung my hat on that my first year as, covering this team. And, just kind of got obsessed with special teams from there. And it really hasn't ended. I've kind of done a lot of deep dives and even talked to other special teams guys around the league. So I'm all in. And it's something, obviously I played a lot of special teams in high school as well. So I've kind of been into it. But, watching that punter battle the first year of camp really got me in. So, yesterday with Tom McMahon doing a deep dive into the new kickoff rule, including stepping away from the podium, stepping off camera and showing us, some of the front side and backside blocks that are going to be going on, some of the things they're going to be working on, and exactly where you want to land the ball. Like, this was my realm. I was so happy yesterday.
No doubt about it. And we're talking to Adam Hill from the Review Journal, my good friend and colleague from the Review Journal, Vegas Nation. You can read all of his stuff, VegasNation.com. And I think, the NFL must have been listening. Something must have been out there like, we got to hook Adam up. And what do we got to do to hook Adam up this year? We know. Let's completely take what the kickoff has been for, X number of years. Let's just throw that out. Let's just throw it out.
Yeah.
Don't even – just cut the tape, burn it, because what we're going to see this year, Adam, compared to what we saw last year in the last few years, it's night and day. It's not even going to look the same. It's going to be a different world and a different planet. And I got to imagine that from the moment that was announced and the moment they started talking about it and the moment you started taking a look at it and analyzing it, it must have been just nirvana for you.
It is, just to kind of deep dive into what the optimal strategy is and how you're going to use it. And I think that's some of the stuff Tom McMahon was talking about yesterday of, for him, like just going into the lab and learning something new is cool. I was mixed at first, one, because it's such a drastic change. It's so different. You're asking players who've done something their entire lives to now do something totally different and learn a new thing. And you're going to have fans watching the game and you're going to be seeing something that looks totally different than the past. I also hate that there's no more surprise onside kicks. That sucks, because I thought that was, something that when kickers had, a good ability to onside kick, it was a huge advantage for their team. So I don't like that part of it and the strategy that comes out of it. But it had gotten to the point where kickoffs were pretty much a useless play.
Yes.
And the league does not want those in the game at all. They changed that with the extra point a few years ago. They made it much more difficult to kick an extra point. And, we've seen the results. It's not automatic. I mean, it's very, very likely that you're going to make the extra point, but you have to watch it, right? There was a time you didn't have to watch. You just assumed that was, okay, that's another point. Now you have to at least check it out. So it's one less play of the game that's meaningless. You're going to have something every time. You're going to have a return, basically. So I'm excited for it. I think there's a lot of things that can happen. I think there's a lot of strategy. And I think fans eventually are going to get used to it, but it's going to look very, very different when you turn on your TV. It's going to look like, hey, this is not the game that I've ever seen before. And it's not. It's very different, but they've got to find ways to make every play exciting.
Talking to Adam Hill from the Review Journal. All right, so I had to kind of retroactively go back and track this one down. But do you have an understanding of what's going to happen on the safety kick now?
Yeah, that was another thing I was looking at too as well. I think it's fairly similar because you can punt it still, which I think most teams generally do.
But starts from way back. I think it starts at the 20-yard line where you're kicking it now.
That's where it's been.
What's that?
That's where it's been.
Correct, but now you have to still kick it into the 20-yard zone. You still have to get it into there, or the other team. Now, I'm pretty sure that AJ is going to be able to kick it from 120 to the other, but yeah, that's not going to necessarily be a guarantee either. And if you don't, then the other team gets the ball at the 40-yard line. And it's still going to be the same exact setup where your tacklers are going to be at the other team's 40, the receiving team's 40, 5 yards in front of the blockers at the 35. But that's going to be kind of a – I'm trying to visualize that. That's going to be a long punt for guys to get it into that area. Otherwise, the team's going to be penalized greatly.
Well, yeah, and you were able to punt before and you were able to punt now, but I think you also probably will be more likely to kick off to make sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Because now hang time does not matter at all. There's absolutely no value to hang time on a kickoff. In fact, it's a negative to have the punt, you know, the kick hang out longer where guys could go catch it. So you don't want to have, you just want to drive it down there. I think they'll be fine doing that. But it's experimental. I think that's the other part of this, that there's going to be special teams coaches all around the league that come up with some plan and spend hours and hours and days and just months locked in their rooms studying this. And then all of a sudden the plans are going to change dramatically every week. And Tom McMahon talked about that yesterday. It's going to be an evolutionary process where you're just trying to figure out, okay, we thought this was going to be the right way. It's not the right way. You're also going to have times where, hey, your team is going to tell you in practice, our returners are doing way too well. Our returners are telling us this is too easy, and then we're going to have to adjust from there. So there's so many different things that are going to happen. The other part is the Raiders were trying some things yesterday that I was watching them practice, and I won't say what it was.
Right.
But they're trying some things, and I said, wait, is that allowed?
Right. Yeah.
Like, is that allowed under the new rules? So I'm trying to you know, look through and find where the rules are. So that's going to be the experimental process where I think even some team, like, they might even do something and then find out when it gets to time it's not allowed. But they might be trying it now and looking at it now. And I think, you know, that's what happens with new rules. It's one of the reasons, the only thing I like more than special teams play is rules.
Right.
Because, I mean, I love a rule because once you have a rule on paper, then it becomes a, you know, a game to see who can exploit it, who can take advantage of it, who can find a shortcut in it. And that's one of the things I love most about sports. So I'm very excited about this and very excited to see where it goes and how it evolves throughout the year. And I think there's people that are going to look at it and say, this is stupid, I hate this. Well, sorry, you might hate it, but it's part of the game now. And so you've got to either jump on board or, I guess, just stop watching football. But that's stupid.
Yeah, you don't want to cut off your nose to spite your face on that one. All right, one more question about this. I can't promise you that this is going to be the last question on the new kickoff rule. But one thing that, okay, two things. You said hang rule or hang time is meaningless. In fact, it's a little bit detrimental. So is probably just kicking it straight, not straight to the guy, but just allowing the returner to catch it and start running it because that's going to give them a huge advantage. The tacklers can't start their motion forward until the ball, A, either bounces in that 20-yard zone or is caught by somebody in that 20-yard zone. So ideally what you want to do is kick it in a way that bounces first before it's able to get gathered up by the runner. You think that's probably, you know, common sense, right?
Yeah, for sure. Well, my original thought is ideally you just want to bounce it in the landing zone and kick it through the end zone. Because that you're not going to kick it through the end zone anymore because that's going to come all the way out to, you know, up to 30. It's going to be way too good a field position.
Right.
You don't want to kick it. You don't. You know, every team now just kicks it through the end zone for the most part. You don't want to do that anymore. That sets you up with tough field position defensively. But what you can do is land it in the landing zone and skip it through the end zone. And I think that would be probably ideal for a lot of teams because that brings it out to the 20, and I think you're fine bringing the ball to the 20. But in an ideal world, what you actually want to do is bounce the ball in the landing zone and then kind of spin it and just hope for just kind of chaos with the ball where it just kind of lands in the corner and sits there. And then by the time the guy picks it up, the entire, you know, coverage team is down there swarming around him. Because as you said, once it hits the ground, you can go, and you've only got the 40 yards to go. You're going to be able to get down there pretty quickly. Now, it's going to take a second to get up to speed because you're not going to be running the whole time the ball's in the air like you did in the past. But once it hits the ground, you can take off. So you just want it to kind of bounce around. Like, you want chaos on the roll and on the spin on the kick. That's really what you want here. That's the ideal scenario.
Yeah, and for to help visualize what we were watching yesterday, they were using the jugs machine, and then I think they actually had some guys kicking it off too, where the ball would bounce and those receivers, the return men, became kind of like baseball players. You're picking it up off the bounce, then you're starting to run. My thing is, I'm wondering if we're ever going to see this, where the kicker kicks it into the back of one of his players. That's because you're trying to kick it, I would think, low, and then to put some spin on it so that it hits the ground and just starts, you know, spraying every which way again to start, you know, so that it's difficult for the returner to pick up and run with it. Do you ever think we're going to see a situation where you kick it too low and it might hit somebody right in the back, which would be detrimental, obviously, to the kicking team? But that's going to be some strategy, too, in order to get it over the defenders and over the blockers in a way that lands strategically in that landing zone.
Yeah, you clearly weren't standing over by me yesterday during practice, because this is probably like a 15-minute conversation.
Okay,
yeah. Yesterday for
I was
sure.
Saving it for the radio.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it, that's one of the tricks, right? Because somebody was coming over and asking, and I'm trying to remember who it was, you know, just to for context, but somebody said, well, shouldn't it just be like an onside kick where you just kick it as low as possible and just skip it along the ground? Well, no, it can't be, because it has to get at least to the landing zone.
Exactly.
So you can't just do that. And also, you run the risk of hitting it into one of your players.
I mean,
your guys are down there, you know, 30 yards in front of you. So you've got to get it over them and over the blockers and then land it into the landing zone. So that's the tricky part of it. You can't just skip it all on the ground either. So you want to kick it low with a lot of spin, a lot of just kind of junk on it, and just bounce it around in there, make it tough. And we saw, you know, the Raiders are practicing the kickoffs with both A.J. Cole and Daniel Carlson. But as you said, the kickoff returns, they were practicing with the jugs gun. And just, I mean, it was really zipping down there with a lot of just a lot of junk on it. And
yes,
it was interesting to see the guys kind of pick it up. I know, you know, one guy that people are interested in is obviously Dylan Lauby, the draft pick, who is a returner.
Very smooth out there.
I thought he did the best of anyone in terms of handling some of the bounces, some of the spins. Really good hands with picking that up. But, you know, there was about eight or nine guys that were trying out kind of returning, because, you know, it's not just about learning how to kick off and finding a way you want to kick off. It's about finding guys that can return it. That's part of why they drafted somebody that can be a returner. But doesn't mean it's his job. There's a lot of guys that are going to be vying for that and want to be a part of it. And, you know, one of the things Tommy Mann said, the reality of the world is, hey, if this play is an important play now, if you're going to have to return the ball this many times, all of a sudden returners are going to be valuable in making money. So there's going to be a lot more guys that are jumping into the mix trying to be return men because you can make plays and in turn, you know, get that money when it comes to time to sign your contract.
No doubt about it. You can make an impact. Like you said, if it's one primary guy back there, there's a chance that one player is going to touch the ball 80 times over the course of a season, which is the equivalent of a Davante Adams, or, you know, maybe not quite as many as a Davante Adams would get, but he's, you know, usually gets about 110, 115 catches. So it's a premier player like, but that's over, you know, again, the course of a season, which could be 5 to 6 times in a game, depending on how many touchdowns you're giving up, I guess. But it will be super interesting to see. And I honestly, I've never spent more than 20, the time that I've spent thinking about special teams and the kickoff over the last 24 hours since we talked to Tom McMahon yesterday is more than probably my entire lifetime. So if the NFL wanted to create interest in a part of the game that wasn't as interesting as other parts of the game, I think they've certainly achieved it. All right, Adam. So
join the club. I pretty much lay in bed every night thinking about special
there
teams.
There you go. The thoughts that must be going through your head at that hour, Adam Hill.
It's wild.
We are talking to Adam Hill from the Review Journal and VegasNation.com. You could go to VegasNation.com and read all of his stuff. All right, so we got a chance to talk to Tom McMahon. We got a chance to talk to Luke Getsy. We got a chance to talk to Patrick Graham, the three coordinators of the special teams, offense, and defense. I had Tashawn Reed, our good friend from The Athletic, on at 12:30 earlier in the show. And I think we both agreed, and I'm going to ask you to chime in as well. The amount of personality that was shown by all three of those coaches. Now, Luke is somebody that we're just getting ready to know now. Only the second time we've ever really talked to him was yesterday. But we've talked to Tom before. We've obviously talked to Patrick Graham quite a bit over the course of the season. Let's just stick with him. More personality from Patrick Graham yesterday, which we all know exists. He's a guy that went to Yale. He's smart as a whip. You know, we know that he has all of those things going for him. But I think for the first time, we were able to see much more of that personality in him. And I want to say that the only way that that's probably able to happen is because Antonio Pierce, unlike previous head coaches here, specifically Josh McDaniels, probably is like, go be yourself out there when you're talking to the media. I'm not worried about you giving away state secrets or other teams going to be able to glean something from what you're saying. Just go be yourself. Am I wrong to think that that has occurred? Because the Patrick Graham that we saw yesterday was far different than what we've seen the first few years here.
Yeah, I think for sure. And that's more the Patrick Graham that you talk to when he's not standing at the podium, for sure. So I think it's just more of himself. And as you mentioned, he went to the best of the Ivy League schools in Yale, for sure. And so, yeah, he's a guy who's not, he's not scared to talk. He's not nervous about talking. But it did seem at times like that's how he was last year, because I think every answer that he gave was, thinking in his mind, well, how am I going to explain giving that answer? Probably when I have to go talk upstairs, which is probably something that happened where, you kind of, hey, why did you say this? Why did you say this?
Right.
Like that's the Patriot way. And as much as Josh McDaniels said he wasn't trying to recreate the Patriot way, like that was one of the things that seemed to come from there, for sure. So I would imagine it was not a long talk, not a, like, hey, be more personable, anything like that. It was just be yourself. And, nobody's going to be mad for anything you say. And I think we saw not only, the interviews that we did with him, the podium time that he had, but also that was something that while, I went back and listened to this like three times last night, and Michael Mayer didn't directly say, hey, we've been given permission to have fun at practice. But he very, very strongly insinuated that yesterday that this was about, hey, this is a new time, a new coaching staff, and hey, we're allowed to celebrate. We don't just score a touchdown and toss the ball to the official and go back to the huddle. Like, scoring touchdowns is fun. It's what we try to do. It's what we strive to do every single day. It's why we spend hours in the meeting rooms and watching film and all the practices. It's trying to get to the end zone. And when you get there, celebrate and have fun. And that didn't seem to be something that was happening before. So I think that goes not only for the coaches, but also for the players every day, just being able to do what they want to do and have fun out there.
Adam Hill, am I wrong to suggest that, or to think and to imagine that that can have a tangible effect, maybe not on all the wins and losses. I mean, that's going to get all sorted out. But I think that can have a positive effect on this team. Antonio Pierce just letting them breathe, have fun, go out there and play, do your job, and don't feel compelled to act a certain way. Be yourself. I think that could have a positive effect.
I think it definitely can. I think it did, for stretches last year, for sure. But I also, caution to say that usually can't last forever.
Right.
That doesn't mean it can only last a week or a month or even a year. I mean, it could last 3-4 years, but we've seen a lot of times throughout sports history, like when it goes wrong, it tends to go very, very wrong.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it has to be now or next year or the year after that. Like, this can continue. It's just, it's not that doesn't mean that players' coaches can't, thrive long term. I mean, they can, but it tends to be something where it's tough to turn around. It's also the other way. I mean, I'm not saying one way is better than the other. Like, it doesn't tend to work long term when you work you do the McDaniels way either. Like, neither one of those does. You have to find a balance. You have to find a balance between the X's and O's, the strategy, and the environment. And I think you also have to find a balance between the, hey, let them do what they want to do, and also, let's put some restraints on things every once in a while. I think there has to be a balance of both things and all the different ways. I think, one way doesn't work forever. It's got to be a little bit of mixture of all the different, ways to manage people. I think that's probably the best thing. So I think Antonio Pierce will find that at some point and know that it can't just be, hey, everybody just wild, wild wested out here. I think he'll do that. I think he'll find his voice. I think he'll find himself. But, we'll see how that kind of changes things along the way. People don't tend to react well when you try to be the disciplinarian after you've let everybody do what they want to do for a while. But I think that he has probably earned the respect that he's able to do that at some point if he has to.
I appreciate your time, Adam Hill. One last question for you. Luke Getsy touched on it. Obviously, no answers are going to occur over these next 3 weeks or 4 weeks. But how do you what do you think it's going to come down to in terms of evaluation and assessment to decide who's going to win the starting quarterback job between Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew? And do you have a pick in mind in terms of who ultimately is going to win that job?
Well, I mean, I feel like it's a true competition, and I think that's good So what's it going to come down to? Like, you know, just I think evaluating every single snap, it's evaluating every single play, it's evaluating how they are between huddles during practices. You know, all those things matter, and everything's going to be on film, and everything's going to be scrutinized over and over again by everyone in that building. So I think it's a true competition, and whoever wins it, wins it. I know that on the betting board right now, you can actually place wagers that Gardner Minshew is the starting quarterback on, you know, week one, that first snap of the season. And he's a very big favorite to be the quarterback one. I don't necessarily think those odds are correct. I think Aiden O'Connell, you know, maybe has a little bit of an edge, and we know that he's taking the first snap, you know, during reps, during practices. He's earned that from being around from last year. But to me, I don't see any reason that you would start Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew gives you the best chance to win games, but I don't see any reason to start that. Like, you know what you have in Gardner Minshew. You don't know what you have in Aiden O'Connell. And I don't think anybody has aspirations this is a Super Bowl team. So figure out what you have. I mean, what you don't want is to start Gardner Minshew, have another season where you're 8-9, and then say, I wonder if Aiden O'Connell's the guy. Now, maybe he is. Let's take another year to assess that. Like, you don't want that. That's a terrible place to be. So I think you can evaluate Aiden O'Connell in his future while you try to develop everybody else. And, you know, if you catch lightning in a bottle, you do. I don't think you're catching lightning in a bottle with Gardner Minshew because you kind of know what he is already.
Right.
So, you know, you're hoping that he really succeeds, but really what you're doing is evaluating him and deciding if he's the guy that can carry you forward in the future.
I like that line of thinking, Adam Hill. That's why we have you on the show, to get that kind of insight. And, of course, your insight into special teams, which is second to none among Raider media. And I would venture to say NFL media in general. I put you up there against anybody in terms of special teams. Thank you so much for taking some time. It's always a pleasure and always a great time. Truly appreciate it, Adam.
Sounds good. Enjoy the day.
All right, you too. That's Adam Hill from the Las Vegas Review-Journal and Vegas Nation. And when I say that he is a special teams aficionado, I am not exaggerating. We do call him the special teams SID, and for good reason. And this year, he's got something to chew on. This is going to be a year-long story with the special teams. I'm Vinny Bonsignor. This is the JT the Brick Show.
I'll be honest with you, 100% of the season, you know, because we're going to steal ideas from other people. It's brand new. You know, it's something nobody's ever done. You're going to steal from each other. You're going to steal leverage from each other. You know, it's, I think it'll go all the way through, you know, the Super Bowl on the last play.
That's Raiders special teams coach Tom McMahon, the suddenly effusive and enthusiastic and expounding Tom McMahon, a Tom McMahon that we have not seen these last couple of years as a special teams coach of the and that's okay. We talked about it with Adam Hill. We talked about it with Sean Reed from The Athletic. I think there's a new directive, a new way of doing things with the Raiders, and one of those ways of doing things is to allow the coordinators to express themselves. And you know, I'm not quite sure why it wasn't that way under Josh McDaniels. But if you trace it back to the Patriot days, whether it was Bill Belichick, who never said anything to the media, said a lot of words, but was never really very expansive in what he actually did say to his coordinators when they were had to speak to the media. And by the way, it's by league rule that the coordinators have to talk. We, by league rule, have to talk to the special teams coordinators, the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator, at least once a week during the regular season, and at some point during this stage of the season, and I think in training camp they'll make them available to us again. So it's something that coaching staffs have to do by league rule, and certain coaching staffs handle that a lot different than other coaching staffs. Under the previous regime, it felt like, and I don't think that we're speaking out of school when we say this, but there was a directive from the head coach to be extremely short and extremely non-communicative in terms of giving us anything from the assistant coaches and specifically the coordinators. Whereas I don't think Antonio Pierce, I've been saying this for a while now, I don't think he sweats things like that. I don't think he cares about you know, the coaches and his assistant coaches going out there and expressing themselves and letting everybody know, including, by the way, future employers. You know, when Sean McVay was under consideration for the Rams job, he was the Washington football team's offensive coordinator. He had been that for the last couple of years prior to that. So I barely knew who Sean McVay was, but, oh, yeah, he's the offensive coordinator over in Washington. Rams are going to interview him as part of their head coaching search back in 2017. Went back and called up every media availability that he had as Washington's offensive coordinator the previous two seasons. They were all on YouTube. And it took me about three media sessions in to realize this dude is spectacular. And it was Jay Gruden was his head coach. And he obviously allowed him, just go be yourself. And Sean McVay was himself. I remember texting somebody in the Rams organization saying, hey, just my two cents, but this guy is great. And the response was, no, he's not great. He's a stud. And I was like, oh, looks like the Rams kind of figured out who their head coach is going to be. And part of my assessment of him was just what I saw him, in those media sessions that he had every week with the Washington media. And so what if Patrick Graham is allowed to express himself in the same way, and that attracts or creates some interest for him from another team to be their head coach? It's not giving away state secrets. You're not going to win or lose football games based on what your coordinator says to the media. Are you kidding me? That would even be a consideration, that we're that protective of information as a head coach, that you're not going to allow your assistant coaches, your coordinators, to go out there and be themselves? There are times when it was just so obvious the last couple of years where there was a directive, do not say anything to the media. And it was useless. It was pointless. Talking to them was pointless. And I felt bad for Patrick Graham because, as we were talking with Adam Hill, it's a Yale graduated human being. You know, he's an extremely smart person. And you're going to curtail him out of some weakness or out of some not just protectiveness of making sure that he doesn't say something that's going to give the other team an edge. Hey, how about just coaching your team up, getting them prepared to play the opponent, and then having them go out there and execute your game plan and make the right decisions during the course of a game? How about letting that win the day? How about worrying more about that than what your assistant coaches are saying? And I just feel like it's a different way and probably a better way. I don't think Antonio Pierce gives one squat, because you know what? He also respects Patrick Graham enough. He also respects Luke Getsy enough. He also respects Tom McMahon enough to know that they know that you don't cross certain lines. Yes, you can be expansive. Yes, you can verbalize your thoughts. Yes, you can answer your questions and put some substance behind those answers without giving away major secrets. They're coaches. They're human beings. They're adults. They know that line not to cross. And if you treat them like human beings and as colleagues and as professionals, they're going to reward you for that confidence. Otherwise, they're going to be really scared to say anything, and that just looks ridiculous. It looks really bad. This is Vinny Bonsignore. We're going to have Q Myers, who's coming up at 2 o'clock on his show, Unnecessary Roughness, but he's going to join us for the last 15 minutes of this show. It's going to be a little bit of a crossfire segue, ending this show and segueing into Q's show here in just a minute or two. I'm Vinny Bonsignore. This is JT the Brick Show.
Night day difference from my first year and my second year to now. Like, now I'm like, all right, I know I can play. I know I can go against one of the best, especially with Max and anybody else that we going to play this year. And I know what I can do. So all I got to do now is actually meet my potential and actually do it and help everybody else out on the team as well.
That's Raiders right tackle. I think we're safe to say that now, right tackle. Thayer Munford, I'd be shocked if he wasn't starting the season at right tackle. And joining us now is Q Myers, who's on deck, ready to do his show, Unnecessary Roughness, starting at the top of the hour. Q, you know, when you start thinking about this offensive line, first of all, thanks for joining me. I think this is great. When you start talking about the offensive line now, and we got a little bit of a visual of it yesterday with Dylan Parham at right guard, Thayer Munford at right tackle, Andre James is going to be the starting center. I didn't see a whole lot of Jackson Powers Johnson yesterday. He was out there doing some other things, but eventually he's going to be the left guard. And Colton Miller at left tackle, he was also kind of working to the side. But when we see it in real time and start thinking about, wow, okay, that offensive line looks kind of interesting now with Dillum over there on the right side, and the thought and reality of Jackson Powers Johnson being on the left side, does it give you a little bit more hope that this offensive line is going to maybe be better than we envisioned just a week or so ago or 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, what it does for me is it envisions toughness, right? Mm-hmm. I see that offensive line and I say, man, those are some dudes. And why I say that is Thayer Munford let us know yesterday that he was a dude,
yeah,
right? And I didn't know. I'll be the first to admit it. I said it on the show yesterday. You know, he came back when we talked to him. He had a little edge to him,
yep,
right? He said he heard all the conversation about the Raiders need a right tackle in the draft. I have no problem admitting I said that many times. I know a lot of Raider Nation said it. I know a lot of people that cover the team said it, right?
Of course.
So, I mean, that was a narrative that was out there. And not to mention, he had told me and you that he was comfortable at the left side. So I'm looking at him as, okay, maybe he's an eventual guy that can replace Colton Miller. Maybe he's a swing tackle. Maybe he'll try out for the right side, but maybe he's not that comfortable there, and he knows himself better than I know him. So I didn't, you know, really even consider him as a big-time option. I knew he was not a big-time option. That's the wrong way to word it. A solution. Mm-hmm. I thought he was an option, but I didn't really know if he was going to be the solution. But the way that he, you know, talked about it and approached it and was very businesslike yesterday, it felt to me like, okay, this is a guy who knows what he wants, knows what he needs to do, and is going to go get it. It's going to be given every opportunity. And with Dylan Parham right there next to him, and I think the right guard spot is his better position, mm-hmm. then you've got Colton Miller, who's, you know, the end-all, be-all. He's been there forever. You know what you're going to get from him. And JPJ, with the toughness he brings to that left guard spot, as long as he earns that spot. Andre James at center, I think you got a really nice offensive line, a tough offensive line in the image of their head coach, Antonio Pierce.
Yeah, I completely agree. And as we didn't think about this on draft night, but now that we are thinking about it, and now that we kind of got a glimpse of it yesterday, it makes all the sense in the world. Without question, and Q Myers is joining us as he tees it up for his show, Unnecessary Roughness, coming up at the top of the hour. Q, you know, when you think about Thayer and what he expressed, how he expressed himself about all the chatter that was around about the need for the Raiders to draft a right tackle, and, you know, it's just part of the job, right? And
yeah.
We heard Michael Mayer talking about, you know, some of the, I wouldn't say misgivings, but, oh, they drafted a tight end? What does that mean for me? You know, and you know, it's a new regime, it's a new offensive coordinator, it's a new tight end coach. Am I still in good standing around here? I mean, those are human thoughts that you're going to have. It's a reminder, Q, and Tom Telesco touched on this when he made the call to Andre James after drafting Jackson Powers Johnson.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, there's a human being that's in the locker room, and every player that you draft is a potential replacement for somebody that's already in the building. And I think it's okay to be cognizant of, hey, you know, it's okay to make a call and to ease somebody's concern or to explain the thought process behind it. And I think fans and sometimes we in the media lose that a little bit in terms of there's a human side to this whole thing. And I think we saw Thayer Munford express that and Michael Mayer express that yesterday as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I can only imagine what Aiden O'Connell's feeling like.
Yeah.
right? I mean, because he's spent all offseason hearing how badly the Raiders needed a quarterback and, you know, what they were going to go do and give up and what they're willing to do to give up and go get Jaden Daniels. And again, I said it a million times, right? I have no problem saying it, that was something that they, you know, were going to try to do and wanted to do. And so, yeah, I mean, you're right. There's a human element to this. We all, you know, are under that kind of category, right? I mean, whenever anyone talks about any of our jobs or any of our positions or what we're doing, you know, there's always some kind of care about it. And if you don't care, then you don't have a pulse, right? So, I mean, it's just, it is what it is in that situation. And these guys know that they're under more scrutiny than any of us will ever be under. And that just kind of goes with the nature of the game. But again, man, and I've said it 1,000 times, that could be the reason that fuels somebody to go out and maybe give a little bit extra effort or give that I'll show these guys, then cool, even better, right? Then go out there, use that to the best of your ability. I do it all the time and make the most of it. And if it works for you, that's awesome. So I'm excited by what Thayer Munford said, the attitude and the approach he brought. Michael Mayer the same. He was fired up and energetic when he talked. And I think that they're just ready to go out there and play and show what they can do. And most importantly, like Michael Mayer said, they're having fun, something that they didn't necessarily do a year ago.
Yeah, and I want to get to that in 1 second, because that really did stand out as well. And, you know, on the flip side of all of this, if you're Tom Telesco and you're Antonio Pierce, your job is to make the team better. So there are going to be tough decisions of drafting somebody that's going to replace somebody. I remember vividly two or three times where Jerry West, when I was working for the Lakers, was broken down to tears when he had to trade somebody away. Right. And then he would just, because he loved the guy. Right.
Yeah.
And there's never any loss of that. And he would wipe the tears away and say, my job is to make this team better. So there's going to be difficult decisions that get made. And they understand that. But it's also OK for the decision makers and the leaders that are in place to make those types of calls, just to say, hey, look, this is the thought process behind that. I think it's a very human thing to do. And I think it bodes well for the kind of relationships that you're trying to build in that building. And to that point, and you brought it up, Michael Mayer talking about it's okay to have fun. It's practice, but it's a touchdown in a practice. Nobody's ever going to remember it, but I'm going to celebrate it because it is an achievement. And why not? We're supposed to be having fun out here. And I think that goes directly to Antonio Pierce again. We keep going right back to Antonio Pierce and what he's trying to build. I think that goes back to Antonio Pierce too. And I think that that's a healthy thing as well, to let these guys just go have fun. And I think it's going to lead to better things. Maybe not so much, you know, in Super Bowl wins right now, or anything like that. But you know what I'm saying? I think we're going to see the effects of that, the positive effects of that on the field.
No, I do too. And it's funny because when Michael Mayer was talking about celebrating and it's okay to have fun, and the fact that, you know, there was times last year where he didn't want to show up and, you know, he flipped the script. That was his words, not mine. He said he flipped the script and he was in a much better place and he was excited to go to the facility. He was excited to be out there with his brothers and practice and this, that, and the other. And I asked him straight up, well, how much of that has to do with the energy that the coach is bringing in? And he didn't answer it. You know, I mean, and I wasn't trying to set him up for failure.
Oh, I know.
I just thought that it was because I'm with you. I think Antonio Pierce and his energy is infectious, and he's one of those guys that you like to be. Hell, we like to be around.
Yes.
Him, right. I mean, it's one of those things. So I think that a lot of it has to do with the attitude, the culture, and the approach that Antonio Pierce is bringing. It's making the place and the building better for everybody, and that's what I was really getting to. And you know, Michael Mayer just said, "Yeah, it could be," and I think that told you all you needed to know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? It was he knew.
Yeah.
And you probably didn't want to throw anyone else under the bus in that regard, but I don't think there's any question about that. All right, we just got a couple of minutes. Q, what do you got set up on your show?
Oh, man, we're fired up. We're excited. We got the Hall of Famer kicking us off at 2:30, Mike Haynes, DBs Win
nice.
Games. And he was, matter of fact, a big part of that golf tournament,
a
golf event that you were at over the weekend where you got to talk to Aiden O'Connell and you also talked to Michael Mayer. So we're going to have him come up at 2:30. He'll talk all things Jim Otto and, you know, what he meant to the organization as a fellow Gold Jacketer, what he meant to him. Obviously, we saw him in the locker room week 18 following that Broncos victory. Otto was there. Hendricks was there. Haynes was there. So we'll talk all things Jim Otto. Will also talk all things Raiders and talk about that culture that AP is building. Paloma Villacana will join us from Fox 5 Sports at 3:30, talking all things Aces. They took an L last night, which is a shock, but they did.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they'll just get back on their horse and they'll ride it again. And so we'll talk to Paloma. Then Ted Wynn from The Athletic will do a little film study coming up at 4 o'clock about the West Coast offense. And if you're not busy, I'd like you to join us in the opening drive.
Okay, I am all there. So you guys heard that. Now you know what to do. It's just all you got to do is listen. That's all you got to do. And hey, if you want to participate and call or text 702-365-9200 Q, I'm going to sit right here and I'll be joining you in just 1 second. But thank you for doing the little crossfire segue that we like to do. Appreciate that. Bobby, thank you for all the great work. I want to say thanks to Tashawn Reed from The Athletic, our great friend from The Athletic. Go read Tashawn. He's good at what he does. Adam Hill, thanks to my colleague over at the Review Journal for joining us. Talking special teams, that was his specialty. Thank you for the calls. Thank you for the texts. We really appreciate it. JT, thank you for letting me sit in. I'll talk to you guys down the road.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.